In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Thursday, June 20th, 2013, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and federalnewsradio.com. It's Industry Chatter on Thursday in the 3 o'clock hour. And this week, the Chief Technology Officer of Agilex, Tim Hext, is my guest. Tim, it is good to have you in the studio. You're a veteran here, a friend of the show, and it's great to see you.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here. Thanks.
You are here because of something that you wrote on the Agilex blog, Realize the Value, which I just, it meant a lot to me because it sounded like something I could have written that I related to. But I think the context for people who work in the space that we work in, the government business space, I think there's a lot here to think about. And so I'm happy to have you come on and talk about this issue. It deals with data, and you started out pretty straightforward. I love data. I love gadgets. Now, guys are gadget people.
Right.
So there are not as many ladies, it seems to me, that are into the gadgets. And you get into that in your piece a little bit, kind of contrasting you and your wife. Talk about where you were going here.
Well, originally, this was meant to be a little bit of a lighthearted look, but as an analogy for maybe some of the big data problems that we are seeing in government. But as a dude who likes gadgets and data, I'm smitten with gadgets that collect data, and I have a lot of them. And the maybe it's a I'm on a constant search for finding some new way of putting another sensor in my world. In the blog, I mentioned to reference to my wife that she doesn't get this. It's not so much about the gadgets. Well, maybe it is a little bit about the gadgets, but, or what I spend on them. But it's really about what she sees as an obsession with collecting data about seemingly useless aspects of my life. And maybe it harkens back to this idea when our kids were little, and she would caution me to watch them grow up, not watch them through the lens of a video camera. And are you living life, or are you recording and measuring your life? And I say, yeah, I get it. But now, 17 years later, how glad are we have that footage of our kid learning to walk?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so I always like not only applying the technology, but gathering the data and recording it and analyzing it. And she's a little bit more in the moment of the real world. And so we spar on that issue a bit.
Well, you put in this post something that I think gets right at the essence of the kind of the controversy, the battle that goes on inside agencies. You're talking about a cool new device that you wanted, and she says, why on earth do you want to know all that stuff?
Right.
And this is kind of the conflict that I hear about inside agencies. They have all this data. So why do we collect all this stuff? Why are we doing this? And I guess that's coming with the realization of the ability to collect all of this information, which agencies didn't even really have a long time ago, or at least to sort through it and see what all was there.
Well, there are two things, I think. One is, yes, how do I take advantage of all the data I have been collecting? And am I collecting something new just because I can?
Mm-hmm.
And we see this a lot when someone is talking about a new and advanced technology they would like to put in place, and they would like to analyze that data in some compelling new way. And we say, well, hold on. You have all this other much more straightforward stuff that you're not doing yet. Why are you enamored by that newest, latest, and greatest thing? That is an appeal that I understand,
mm-hmm.
because, like I said, it's a little bit about being able to because we can. In my personal experience with that I mentioned in the blog, yes, just being able to gather this data, and in this case, it's mostly sensor data about me and my life, you know, within the form of these gadgets. But just being able to gather it is neat and all. But it really becomes meaningful when we do something to it with it. And that's mostly about figuring out how to use it to understand how I might optimize something.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it might be, how do I optimize my activity level or the way I drive or my health or what? In government, it's how do I optimize a business process? How do I streamline the way I execute my mission? And if the data that as we get into big data and we're gathering so much data that maybe it's not apparent at first, it's important to recognize that The extra data, all the what maybe is perceived as noise, all that additional data has value because it provides a backdrop for the data that we're interested in. And so we hear a lot that, you know, I really just want to collect the meaningful data. But in some ways, you can only tell what's meaningful against the backdrop of all data. And it's like a painting that has no background. If it looks flat, you know, and then when you paint in the background, you go, oh, he's on a ship. Mm-hmm. You know, I see it. I see the whole picture.
Yeah.
And so we have an expression in analytics that data trumps technique all the time. I'd always almost rather have more data to give clarity to the data I care about than, you know, some necessarily fancier way of selecting out each into particular bit of data. And this debate becomes more and more important as we talk about bigger and bigger data sets. And frankly, them not choosing to gather this data just being thrust upon them mm-hmm. from so many directions.
Now, that's a little bit of a different construct than some of the other technology phenomena that we've been through over the years, because I went back and looked at a couple of different things. And my sense is that generally when a new kind of technology or a new fad, for lack of a better word, comes along in technology and government, we have people who engage in a lot of activity surrounding it right away. Then there's a winnowing process where we figured out that we don't have to do all of this. Maybe we just do a certain portion of it. And then after that winnowing process, there's kind of a plateau and a settling in where, okay, now we've determined what's really relevant to the mission and what really helps us rather than just doing something because it's cool. And that's how things proceed for a while.
Mm-hmm.
The construct that you're talking about around data is potentially could be different moving forward, because if the suggestion is that we want to continue to collect as much as we can, or maybe continue more to offer that background and offer that context, then we're looking at a different dynamic than what we've seen in the past around other kinds of developments.
Well, we also see maybe a overlap between what a particular government organization is doing in the acquisition of their IT to solve a particular problem and what everyone else is doing in industry and in other parts of government, in education, where all of a sudden our data sets might help inform each other. So imagine, I don't know, NOAA that gathers all of this weather data, and they might gather minutiae about the weather that you would say, holy mackerel, why would I care? And in the past, in the example you just used, I was focused maybe on my little bit of a problem, but now that everybody can bring something to the party and I say, hey, what if I look at my problem as a layer on top of the weather, I might see a different insight. And so, and then it's not just the weather, it's the hundreds of other commercial and other government sources of information that might inform what I'm doing. And so, it's in this case, maybe you're right. Maybe the thread you were following is more about the technology as an innovation
uh-huh.
rather than the data as an innovation and our ability now to layer them, aggregate them, bounce them off one another gives us a whole different way of having this pot get bigger and bigger rather than more focused.
That gets right at the heart of one of the things that I've been thinking about big data that I want to talk about later on in the program, but we'll continue in a minute. I want to talk about the quality versus quantity point some more when we come back. Tim Hecht, the Chief Technology Officer at Agilex, is my guest on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Systems, we work relentlessly to stay ahead of the bad guys. One significant challenge every organization faces is cyber threats. That's why our experts leverage the world's most advanced cyber operations technologies, enabling us to preempt network breaches in minutes, not days. Knowing our work makes a difference inspires us every day. We're there on the next front. That's BAE Systems. That's inspired work. Learn more at baesystems.com/nextfront.
Is your agency coping with identifying and protecting against the constant barrage of sophisticated cyber threats, while at the same time trying to improve your FISMA scores? Tune in next Wednesday, June 26th at 1 p.m. to hear from a panel of network security experts that will explore the challenges civilian agencies face in dealing with critical cybersecurity concerns and discuss how to coordinate defenses, leverage advanced tools, and take advantage of CDM programs to help agencies tackle these issues. That's next Wednesday, June 26th. At 1 p.m. Is your agency coping with identifying and protecting against the constant barrage of sophisticated cyber threats, while at the same time trying to improve your FISMA scores? Tune in next Wednesday, June 26th at 1 p.m. to hear from a panel of network security experts that will explore the challenges civilian agencies face in dealing with critical cybersecurity concerns and discuss how to coordinate defenses, leverage advanced tools, and take advantage of CDM programs to help agencies tackle these issues. That's next Wednesday, June 26th at 1 p.m. Federal agencies rely on Sprint to help stretch their technology dollars. With Sprint, you can do more with less. Sprint Mobility Management allows you to manage all of your devices, regardless of carrier. Sprint's Trimble Fleet Management solution allows agencies to monitor vehicles and drivers more effectively. To learn about all of Sprint's federal solutions, visit sprint.com/federalgovernment. That's sprint.com/federalgovernment. Coverage not available everywhere. Restrictions apply.
Previously on Veterans in the Private Sector, Making the Transition, Dan Doherty, Vice President of the Federal Division at EMC, discusses the qualities and skills that veterans bring and could bring to the private sector.
It's an honor to work with the veterans on our team. We have a tremendous amount of veterans in our organization. Some of our best employees are really the servicemen and women that we've hired. They have great leadership skills. They take initiative. They take responsibility. They're accountable. They're creative. You know, those are exactly the things that every company is looking for when they hire great people. 500,000 servicemen and women coming out of the service over the next 5 years. And the reason we wanted to have this discussion today is because we believe that every single one of them is going to be having the same thoughts as they enter, as they leave the service. So number one, you're not alone. We at EMC believe that our veterans are probably the best employees we have today.
At EMC, hiring veterans is one of their top priorities. EMC is a leader at providing cloud solutions and information technology to the federal government. To listen to this discussion in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword veterans.
Chinese cyber spies are hacking into U.S. defense networks. Well, right back at ya. I'm Emily Kopp. On Friday's Federal Drive, we'll take a close look at an elite group of National Security Agency hackers. And we'll meet the man who applied data analytics to violence in Indian country and brought happier days after decades of crime. It starts at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Every single agency right now is dealing with the big data issue. My guest on Industry Chatter today is talking about that, the Chief Technology Officer at Agilex, Tim Hext, writing about me and my data on the Agilex blog, and we have a link to it later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And one of the things that I took away from what you wrote, and when you put it in the context of the federal business space, is you like gadgets that collect information that tell you stuff. Mm-hmm. Federal agencies like the same thing. But with the volume that's coming now, making sense of that, quality data versus quantity of data is starting to become a little trickier for it's kind of a tricky balance for agencies to strike, it seems to me. When you look at that issue, and especially in the backdrop of what you talked about earlier, where it's a good idea to collect as much as you can, but it also means that you have to ferret through all of that and figure out what it all means and figure out what you can use all of it for, it seems to me. Is that fair to say?
It is. It depends how you're using that data. So, for instance, one thing we hear a lot from organizations that have increasing volumes of data is they tend to look at how they might use that in legacy ways. And the expression you've heard 1,000 times is, I'm looking for a needle in a haystack. And if that haystack is so big, finding the needle is hard. Whereas in fact, that's not necessarily the problem we're seeing more and more. It's, I'm looking for particular piece of hay, or I'm, you know what I mean? Or I'm looking for a needle in a big stack of needles, you know, like which one is it? And it's not so black and white that I'm just trying to search for that one small thing in that vast amount of data. So if you think about big data now, being a tool to help inform a collection of questions that are important to me in my mission, then it has a different kind of perspective. And it might not mean that I have to look at every little bit of it. It might mean that a thin layer of it summarized across, you know, all of my data just adds clarity to what I'm looking at. So it's a little bit mixing a new technique for leveraging data in contrast with the, you know, our traditional ways of thinking about, holy mackerel, now I have a whole gigabyte of data. How am I going to deal with that, mm-hmm. you know, in the past? And I don't think people have necessarily made that transition in its entirety yet. For those who have and really think of it just as yet another asset, where its size is not necessarily the issue. It might be, you know, they talk about with big data, volume, velocity, and a variety. You know, it's not just the volume, but it's also how quickly it's coming in. It might be that I just can't digest it that quick. And it also might be that it's not so much, it's just of a type I haven't been able to deal with in the past. It's spatial data, or it's imagery data, or it's time-based stream data, or whatever. And so measuring what's valuable to me in the kinds of questions that are important to me is really the secret in understanding how to leverage these. It's not just how do I make that big pile of hay somehow smaller,
yeah.
which is an old way of thinking.
Right. Well, tell me about that transition, because I think that gets right at the crux of what a lot of agencies are trying to deal with right now, making that transition from thinking about this just as a big box of things to a tool that is going to help them understand something, because that's really it, I think.
Yeah, because we think a lot about big data sets when we add them to the analytic mix.
Yeah.
As it's not what's in that data. It's how that data adds a flavor to all of our data. And so, for instance, in a lot of our analytics, we add training data to a big data set so that it gives context to the data around it. That transition, well, that's the rub, I guess. Mm-hmm. That transition is a little bit about folks looking past what they perceive as the short-term technical issues associated with big data. Are my network pipes big enough? Are my storage subsystems large enough? You know, they tend to think about, can I even consume it?
Mm-hmm.
To get to this mental shift of how it augments my analytic process.
Yeah.
And frankly, that comes the first time they see some magical answer in their data that they did not know they were looking for,
mm-hmm.
That they see how that new data source made that answer possible, even though that answer wasn't in it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I mean, that's really the essence of the struggle that I hear people having mm-hmm. with the data. The whole, this isn't just an individual piece of it. I think this is the whole enchilada.
Now, this is frankly what makes it hard. And we see this pain in our business every day because we are very good at working hard analytic problems. And we say to somebody, hey, we could work your hard analytic problem. And they say, well, how? What question could you answer?
Right.
And we say, well, I don't know. Let us look at your data and see if some good things come out when we apply our skills that you didn't know you were looking for. And they say, well, I guess I'll know it when I see it.
Right.
And it has to put the egg before the chicken a little bit when we're used to doing it the other way around. And it makes it challenging, most of all, for people to get started.
Yeah.
Because you can't, for example, experiment with a little bit of data because it doesn't work. You don't get the answers. So the only time you start to see how valuable it is when you actually try it, and people are a little nervous about trying it if they don't know what they're going to get from it ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a little bit of a catch-22 there.
It sounds like you're confirming what I've heard from other sources and deduced from listening to people talking about this, which is the people who are making that transition successfully are making it in their heads, mm-hmm. between their ears, not technologically. They're not getting it because they're examining a certain kind of technology, or they're upgrading something from something to something else,
right,
or any of that kind of stuff.
That's right.
It's an understanding that they and their teams are coming to about how they have to think differently than they've thought before in order to be successful in this area.
That's right.
Am I getting that?
I think so. Or they had an experiment, maybe, where they were able to prove the concept with a collection of data that was of a reasonable enough size that it offered them something new. And when they have those kinds of insights is when all of a sudden they see a spark that they want to throw gasoline on, mm-hmm. and then they get big quickly. And the value that can come from some of these analytic techniques is extraordinary. But you've got to get everybody to the point where they believe it and recognize that.
Yeah. Well, let's dig into that a little bit more. That starting point, that spark that we try to that we're trying to look for when we come back. Tim Hecht of Agilex, my guest on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Back in just a moment.
The Advanced Alliance Solutions Team, led by Technical and Management Resources, Inc., is a GSA Alliance small business contract holder. Here's President and CEO, Linda Carr.
The Advanced Alliance Solutions Team consists of 7 IT firms. Collectively, our core competencies cover all of the functional areas of the Alliance contract and supports agencies' enterprise IT requirements. For potential small business teaming opportunities, please contact us at advancedalliant.com.
To learn more, visit advancedalliant.com.
Soldiers returning with traumatic brain injuries or other serious battle wounds often spend weeks or months in a VA hospital or other rehab facility. DVDs for Vets is collecting DVDs and portable players for distribution in our community and nationwide. Many of us take for granted our access to everyday enjoyments, and DVDs for Vets needs your help in giving these injured soldiers some diversions from the monotony of a hospital stay during recovery. To donate new or used DVDs or to learn more about this worthy cause, please go to www.dvdsforvets.org.
This week's Experts in Health topic is summer skincare for kids, featuring Dr. Brent Thibodeau, Chief of Pediatrics in Northern Virginia with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group and practices at the Kaiser Permanente Reston Medical Center.
Hi, I'm Dr. Thibodeau. Did you know that a handful of serious sunburns can increase your child's future risk of skin cancer? Here are a few tips to properly care for your child's skin. Apply sunscreen with an SPF, sun protection factor of 30 or higher. Check label for broad spectrum, which means it blocks both UVA and UVB light. Dress your child in protective clothing such as long sleeve shirt, pants, a wide brimmed hat, and sunglasses. Take extra precautions near water and sand, as both reflect the damaging rays of the sun, which can increase your child's risk of sunburn.
Dr. Thibodeau was recently recognized as a top doctor in Washingtonian magazine. To learn more about Kaiser Permanente's Experts in Health, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
Life is filled with uncertainty, military life especially. AFMA can help you breathe easy through it all. Since 1879, AFMA has helped military families with low-cost military life insurance and the best survivor assistance. We're experts at helping you manage the complexities of military life and securing your family's financial well-being. Call 1-877-398-2263 today or go to AAFMAA.com to see how we can help you.
Coffee with Bile. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. The liver disease primary sclerosing cholangitis, or PSC, is rare, but treatment can be difficult, and PSC can lead to liver failure and cancer. So researchers at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, have been looking at ways to reduce the risk that people would get this disease, which affects the liver's bile ducts. And researcher Craig Lammert suspects one might be found in coffee. Lammert looked at patients with and without PSC and found that patients with PSC were less likely to be coffee drinkers.
Coffee drinking specifically actually protects against PSC. I don't recommend my patients start drinking coffee, but if they're already drinking, I say have at it.
The study, presented at a Digestive Disease Week conference, was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Magic 2013, a two-day conference focusing on the critical role of GWACs and MACs, will be held on July 10th to the 12th at the Hilton Alexandria Mark Center. Hear the latest on key issues affecting the acquisition landscape from keynote speakers Congressman Connolly and the former Director of National Intelligence Mike McConnell. Join leaders from NASA SOUP, NITAC, CIO, SP3, Alliant, and more as they provide an update on the most popular multiple award vehicles available today. Register today at magicgov.org.
Now for your Federal News Radio cybersecurity update, afternoons at 30 minutes after the hour. A new scholarship program aims to help veterans become cyber warriors. All expenses will be covered for 10 selected participants in one of four ISC Squared certification programs. A selection committee will begin accepting applications on July 1st. You get your cybersecurity update afternoons at 30 minutes after the hour on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Industry chatter today with Tim Hext of AgileX. And Tim, writing about data and using data in a personal context, but there's a great analogy for what you're writing here when it comes to the federal government. You're writing about gadgets that you love, and I totally relate to that. And all of these gadgets collect information about your health and your driving habits and all of those kinds of things. But as I read your piece, and we have it linked at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, what I detected was somewhat of what I detect sometimes in government, and that is somebody sees that something is possible, and they say, well, we could do something with that, so they go do it. You saw the gadget that would allow you to collect information about your car and your driving habits, and you went and got it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you saw one that you write about that helps to monitor your activity level and your sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got it on you.
I do.
And they're not necessarily connected to each other. They don't relate to each other. They're useful, but it doesn't sound like there was a strategy for you to acquire the ability to collect that information.
Yes, I think that's right. And when they cost a few dollars and I'm doing it as a stocking stuffer, it's not that big a deal for me to go get one because it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I can reverse engineer a reason for having collected that data, maybe.
Yeah.
And frankly, in the questions I ask in the blog about how I might analyze this data, do that a bit, because the point being that as I gather this sensor data, one of them, my activity monitor, might help me improve my health. And frankly, that one was purposeful. I was trying to lose some weight,
mm-hmm.
and so I got something to monitor at my activity. And we have a contest at work that where people take the fewest steps and get prizes, take the most steps, get prizes. And it's about improving your health.
Mm-hmm.
The driving one is pure and simple, just seems neat.
Yeah.
But the question then becomes, as I start to gather this data, can I bounce them against one another and start to say, does my activity level affect my sleep? And does my sleep level affect how aggressively I drive? And if so, can I become a better driver by taking more steps at work? And now, that's a pretty simple thread, and it's a data set of one. It's just about me. Where it really gets interesting, I think, is in the aggregate, and we're not looking at how Tim's activity level affects Tim's driving across these sensors, but maybe in aggregate, can we start to see how folks in the Northeast drive at different times of the year, and how does that impact, you know, traffic, and how does it – and so imagine the supersets of these data, and it's not just about my sensors; it's about all of them that are out there, aggregate, and done so in a way that is meaningful, not just neat.
Yeah, you when you think about it in that way, it strikes me that the concept of pulling all of this stuff together and combing it and massaging it to tell you things. That's an abstract concept, because you need to
decide what it is you think you can get out of it. Like, you just connected three dots there with those three pieces of information that I wouldn't have thought of.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if we're structured well in the federal government to be able to think abstractly. And I'm not sure, because that's not typically the way that IT has operated for however long IT has existed. It's, we need to solve a problem, a box or a widget or whatever solves that problem. We acquire that box or widget. We put it in place. We turn it on. If it works, we're happy. If it doesn't work, we fix it. And then we're happy when it's fixed, and that's the end of it, and we get on to the next thing, is how it's historically been. And that's exactly the opposite of how of what we're talking about here.
Well, and this maybe gets me on a soapbox I've been on here before, which is about the nature of the way technology innovation and in that one extreme basic science and another extreme IT is deteriorating in government to some extent. It used to be government was the place that people wanted to go in order to explore those kinds of new abstract thoughts and innovations. And now, maybe the direction that government IT leadership has to follow is much more tactical, as you say. It is I have a service to provide and a service to deliver, and I need to acquire the technologies that are minimally sufficient to deliver that service. And we're not thinking about new kinds of basic innovations. Now, there are clearly pockets of people inside government that are doing that. There is innovation going on in labs and so on. But the opportunities for the kind of abstract thinking that you're talking about to have an impact that is leaps and bounds beyond the tactical steps that can be taken is not only I think it's less about whether the folks think that way, because I hear it every day, them saying, oh, it'd be great if we could do that. It'd be great. Like they think that way, but they're constrained by their processes, by their procurement processes. For instance, it's very difficult for the government to buy a solution based on a theory.
Mm-hmm.
We believe this will work. Let's go buy the technology to try. That's not how they procure things. And as a taxpayer, I'm a fan of them not overdoing that, right? So they have to have some discipline that says there's a legislative requirement that we do X by this date, and we're going to acquire just the right, you know. And so it's in some ways it's not the way they're structured. So increasingly they've been learning from the way industry solves this, and industry can say, hey, we're just going to go try something, you mm-hmm. know, and if we can save a nickel a billion times, that's a lot of money. And so we're going to try and do it. And then the government can say, well, how can we leverage that expertise in our mission? And my guess is that's the way of the future, more so than government thinking it is the place at which those innovations are researched.
I'm encouraged, though, by what you're saying, because a friend of mine who's wrestling with this problem, as you are, said that the payoff is going to be when people think, when their thought instinctively is, what if we wanted to know ... applying that logic to whatever information they've collected and whatever their mission is what this guy thinks the payoff is.
Well, I think there's a payoff beyond that, though, which is, holy mackerel, I didn't even know that's what I wanted.
Yeah.
And that is such an abstract idea. But the real gems are when we see things in the data that we – there's a lot of times we see things we didn't know we could ask. You know, you might say, wow, I didn't even dream that I could ask that question. But when the data shows us things that we didn't even think of, but yet are really valuable and important, that's really where it starts to, I think, be truly exciting. And those are going to be the real leaps. Figuring out how to make a business process a little optimized is cool and all. So, for instance, let's go back to my example. This morning I took the elevator at work. I was on a weird floor going to, I took the elevator, and I realized that it might have been the first time in a month that I've been in the elevator. And I think that's simply because I wear this activity thing. Mm-hmm. Now I take the stairs. It's just that simple. And so that's a very tactical way of using this data to optimize, in this case, my well-being, mm-hmm. right? But if someone at a larger level is looking at all of this data and can make draw conclusions about health and activity and blood pressure and temperature and all the things that all these sensors are gathering that no one slice of that could perceive, because I don't have all that data or I don't even know what the right questions are, then that represents, in my mind, a kind of meaningful leap that goes far beyond individual optimization, which is swell, but not enough.
Yeah. Well, that's where I want to go next, is pulling all of this together and trying to formulate a strategy to avoid the shiny object syndrome that we see in government a lot. We'll do that when we come back. Tim Hext of Agilex is my guest on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Continue in just a moment.
Leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
What is the power of Ingenuity? It's a commitment by nearly 20,000 ITT Excellus employees to support our nation's military service members, veterans, and their families. That's why they launched the Excellus Action Corps, an employee volunteer program to serve those who have served us so bravely. Visit ExcellusActionCorps.com to learn more and join Excellus employees in your community as volunteers. That's ExcellusActionCorps.com. Excellus. The power of ingenuity.
Hamid Jafari eradicated polio in India. John McKinnon rescued 160 victims of child pornography. And Kevin Geis saved the Air Force $1 billion in energy costs. The list of federal employees making a real difference goes on and on. 31 individuals and teams of feds are being recognized for their work. Each has been named a Service to America Medal finalist. Hear interviews with each of the nominees and learn more about what makes them tick at federalnewsradio.com. Search Service to America.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
John Mahoney is a supervisor of the National Security Practice at the law firm Tully Grinke.
Neither the Whistleblower Protection Enhancement Act nor this Presidential Policy Directive 19 cover contractor employees. There's a vast number of contractor company employees and have access to national security secrets. They really don't have a clear path right now as to how they're supposed to go about blowing the whistle if, in fact, they believe they have witnessed waste, fraud, and abuse.
Hear the entire interview online. FederalNewsRadio.com/Federal Drive.
Now your Federal News Radio DoD report, brought to you by BAE Systems, afternoons at 40 minutes past the hour. Senators lamented the rising costs of the F-35 fighter, but the Air Force Chief of Staff tells them the country can't do without the next generation plane. At an Armed Services Committee hearing, a top Pentagon official offered some solace. Acquisitions Chief Frank Kendall said the plane is 90% developed and about halfway through testing. Kendall said the contractor Lockheed Martin is trying to stabilize the design so it's less expensive to manufacture. The original $400 billion price tag for the 50-year life cycle of the program has ballooned to an estimated $1 trillion. Each branch of the armed services is getting its own version of the F-35. You get your DoD report, brought to you by BAE Systems, afternoons at 40 minutes past the hour on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Tim Hext of Agilex is my guest on Industry Chatter today. He's writing about big data, and we've been talking about it throughout the course of the hour. And as we talked about in the last segment, Tim, a big part of solving the big data issue, I've mentioned my friend who said that the payoff will be when people are thinking instinctively, what if we wanted to know something in particular, whatever that fill in the blank is, and you took that to another level. I didn't know this information was there, was available through this. When something is that abstract, when that's the nut that we're trying to crack as far as hey, we'll be successful when we're thinking and talking this way. How do you build a strategy to take you in that direction? As you just said, we're used to saying this is the goal we want to reach and these are the steps that we need to take. So we'll just start taking the steps and we'll get there. You can't do it that way when these are the kinds of themes that we're working around.
Yeah, I think it's really that's the crux of the matter. That's what makes this hard to get started. And it's not just hard for the folks with the problem. Like, as I mentioned earlier, it's hard for the folks who think they can help solve the problem. Mm-hmm. That's sort of where we are. So many times I have found myself with an instinct that the mission that our customer has is one that I can help advance given the data they've got. But without trying it, we won't quite know. Mm-hmm. And so one thing there are a couple things, I think, to answer your question. One is oftentimes there are some subset problems that are low-hanging fruit that you can sort of tell we'll be able to make meaningful progress. And so having those as early successes while you get a chance to experiment with the bigger swings, you know, so it's the difference, you know, a few base hits while you are also have somebody swinging for the fences.
Yep.
And so having a strategy that allows you to have a little bit of each of those rather than nobody wants to be the program that's been trying to find an answer for 3 years and
right.
never come up with anything. So we're always very much about small, incremental, show value, then show a little bit more value and show a little bit more value. We have a government customer we're doing analytics, and it really started. We said we had this idea, and we were doing other work for them, so they knew us and trust us. We said we had this idea. They kind of rolled their eyes and said, we've been to that movie. We've tried that. And we said, well, we have some new ways. And so literally they said, okay, have one or two people spend just a little bit of time and see if you can provide evidence that that idea has merit. You know, it's not even give me the answer.
Right.
It's just, but they trusted enough to try. It did. And now it's really doing cool stuff. But you've got to lean in a little bit to experiment with that.
Mm-hmm.
But by definition, some of these problems do not bear fruit until they've gotten really big.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or else they would just be the little kind of old problems, mm-hmm. right?
Well, yes. And that makes sense fitting in the context of what we talked about earlier about thinking legacy versus thinking, well, I don't know, whatever name you want to attach to the way that we're trying to think about this stuff
yes.
now. That concept, getting around that, the small wins, that's something that we're seeing throughout government,
right.
you know, all over, not even just IT anymore.
That's right.
Because of the risk aversion that agencies have. Every area.
That's right. Nobody wants these long, drawn-out projects that we're holding our breath for the end of them for them to produce anything. We want iterative, transparent view and seeing progress at each and every step. The challenges with some of these big, hard analytic problems is you have to go pretty far down before you start to see the real promise of them. So how can you chunk it up and
yeah.
start to show? Again, maybe you're not showing the answer. You're showing evidence that an answer will be forthcoming.
Mm-hmm. Well, and maybe that's pay dirt right there to some degree.
Well,
just the idea, because there's a difference between the answer and an answer.
That's right. And especially when the answer that you find yourself encountering is not one that was imagined at the beginning.
And maybe it wasn't even the question that you asked.
It wasn't even the question that you asked. It might be that we've had this where they go, we're down a totally different path, but what you have come upon is very valuable to us.
Right.
Now, similarly, what you have come upon is interesting but not valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be willing to fail as well as to succeed. You just have to fail quickly.
Yeah.
Right? So we talk about failing fast as a not that we're anxious to quickly fail, but that when we do fail, we want to learn from it and move on.
Yep.
And rather than letting those failures take forever.
Yeah. Let's talk about progress and where that progress might go from here on out to wrap up in just a minute on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Tim Hext is the Chief Technology Officer at AgileX. My guest on Industry Chatter today. We'll be back in just a minute.
Recently on Federal News Radio's Federal Tech Talk, sponsored by AT&T. Today in the studio, we're talking with George Newstrom, Vice President of Dell Services Public, and Jeff Lush, CTO of Dell Services Federal Government, talking about Dell and this new cloud offering.
Think about the progress we've made on storage. Think about the progress we've made on compute costs and the capabilities that are there right now. The cloud is the next exponential great technological event that's going to happen that will absolutely help agencies do a lot more with a lot less.
Secure Mobile Government is here.
Evaluate a department budget at a metro station.
You can now work out in the field with a smartphone and the safety and security of the AT&T network. AT&T extends the cyber defense perimeter of your agency's mobile workforce.
Study new employment stats while teleworking.
Your security is predictive and preventive. Go to att.com/gov/secure to learn how AT&T mobile security can safely connect you to both your agency and constituents. AT&T, rethink possible.
Coffee with Bile from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. The liver disease primary sclerosing cholangitis, or PSC, is rare, but treatment can be difficult, and PSC can lead to liver failure and cancer. So researchers at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, have been looking at ways to reduce the risk that people would get this disease, which affects the liver's bile ducts. And researcher Craig Lammert suspects one might be found in coffee. Lammert looked at patients with and without PSC and found that patients with PSC were less likely to be coffee drinkers.
Coffee drinking specifically actually protects against PSC. I don't recommend my patients start drinking coffee, but if they're already drinking, I say have at it.
The study, presented at a Digestive Disease Week conference, was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
At BAE Systems, we realize it's critical that our armed forces can get the job done, even when budgets are tight. That's why our engineers created the technology to transform an unguided munition into a precision laser-guided rocket, the perfect low-cost surgical strike solution. Knowing our work makes a difference inspires us every day, so we'll be there on the next front. That's BAE Systems. That's inspired work. Learn more at baesystems.com/nextfront.
Join AFSEA International for its 2013 Cyber Symposium and Expo, June 25th through 27th at the Baltimore Convention Center. Focusing on defining full-spectrum global cyberspace operations, sessions will highlight the critical missions of the U.S. Cyber Command and its interface with government, military, academia, and industry partners. Topics include operational security, coalition operations, and cyber workforce training. Register to attend or exhibit at www.afsea.org, keyword cyber.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Tim Hext of Agilex, my guest on Industry Chatter today. We've talked about where we are with data and the ways that that's collected and the ways that we try to analyze it and those kinds of things. What do you see on the horizon, Tim, for the, especially for the analysis and deployment process, the question asking process? It looks like we're pretty good right now at collecting it, starting to get good at collating it. But I wonder what you see on the horizon for the rest.
I think there are a couple things. There are some technology things. We you talked about earlier how it's a little bit more about the information than the technology. And there are some technology things that are advancing that mostly help us deal with the scale. And that is not only volumes of data, but the compute power required to meaningfully analyze huge data sets. And so we see these in Hadoop clusters and sort of these massively parallel environments. And as those mature, we will be able to practically deal with larger volumes of data, assuming that larger volumes add value. The second is going to be around some of the analytic tools and techniques that are evolving to deal with these more abstract ways of looking at the data. So again, if I have a zillion bazillion records and I'm trying to search and find one of them, the tools to do that exist. It may be fast, it may be slow, but we know how to do that. If I'm trying to draw meaning from this data, which is some in English and some in other languages, and some of it's not text at all, it's imagery, the tools to draw that kind of meaning and relate those ideas with one another are advancing quickly. And frankly, on small data sets, were less interesting. And they're getting very interesting now that we're applying them to big data sets. So I think as those tools begin to scale further, as they begin to have better interfaces, so it doesn't require a PhD in mathematics to craft the data in such a way that it answers the question, but it has interfaces that a business user can start to interrogate and explore and discover rather than just query. Queries, no problem. It's not about query. It's about discovering what I didn't know, what I was looking for. As those tools evolve, then we'll really see when the mission people start exploring their data is really when we're going to see its value, rather than when those of us on the technology side are trying to guess how they might want to see it.
Is there such a thing as a Moore's Law for data, or is it possible that we'll see some corollary to Moore's Law that applies to data in the future? Trying to understand what the curve's going to look like for the future?
I don't know. The my guess is Moore's Law applies. It's very much about the hardware and technology infrastructure to be able to deal with it. The data is growing. I don't know if the data is growing all that much faster, but it seems like the data to which any one group has access is growing much faster. And it's that computing infrastructure that is scaling the same way Moore set out a long time ago.
Yeah.
Maybe even faster now that you parallelize things. That is really making it all possible.
Which is really funny to me, because I remember reading something in one of the computer trades maybe 2 or 2.5 years ago that was proposing that we've now topped out on the need for technology to grow. We can do things now pretty much as fast as we're probably going to need to, and we have pretty much as much storage capacity as we're going to need to. And then big data comes along and throws all of that out the window and just proves how little we really know about what the future brings.
Yeah, that's like saying everything's been invented.
Yeah, that's true. Tim, there's a lot more we could talk about, and we're out of time, but it's been great to have you in the studio.
Oh,
again.
It's been my pleasure.
Good to see
anytime.
You as always.
Thanks.
Tim Hext is the Chief Technology Officer at AgileX, and my conversation with Tim will be archived later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, where you can find out more about big data. We'll put a link to his blog post too, called Me and My Data, so you can read along with that. And hour number two of In-Depth with Francis Rose coming in just a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.